If you look into 2018, David Jones, a former Conservative Brexit minister, and Chris Bryant, a former Labour Europe minister, are here. David, Chris, Happy New Year, and welcome to Chopper's Brexit podcast.
And to you.
David, it's been quite a busy few days for the Conservative Party, isn't it? You've been all been by your phones waiting for the phone call from Theresa May.
Well, I wasn't personally, but I know a lot of my colleagues were. I believe that one colleague, in fact, had a phone call from an unmarked number, and when he picked it up, they asked him if he'd got PPI. but it is the case that a lot of colleagues were expecting the call, and of course, a lot of members from the newer intakes have actually had ministerial positions.
Has it been good for Brexit, this one?
Well, it remains to be seen. I think so far as the cabinet is concerned, it's broadly neutral. But I think that when we look at the senior and junior appointments at the middle and lower, junior levels, it remains to be seen. A lot of these are very new members with no particular record that we know about.
You've got 100% leavers in the Dexia department, your old department.
Yes.
And 100% remainers in the Treasury and Cabinet Office. Is that going to create a battle?
I think that was possibly predictable. But by the way, I would say I was delighted to see Suella Fernandez appointed to Dexia.
That's the extra job there, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. It'll strengthen the team there, and she's a very formidable player.
Now, Chris Bryant, you're a student of Parliament. You've written books about this place. Do you think this has been a successful reshuffle? You've been watching on from afar.
David entices me with the Suella Fernandez appointment, which I think is one of the worst of the lot, because she's a person who said that a no deal will be good for us. So I presume that's what she's aiming for. I think that's pretty distressing. But the bigger point
some people
for me,
agree with her, by the way, in the country. But you may not.
No, indeed. Well, there's very few, I think, who think that no deal is the best outcome.
It's better than a bad deal, though, is what her point is.
Yeah, let's go on with all the tautologies which Theresa May has become famous for. Look, I think there are two big things. First of all, I don't think it's good to have so many reshuffles all the time, because it means that there are people who have only been a minister in a particular department for 6 months, just beginning to get to grips with the subject, who are now being moved off somewhere else.
So Rory Stewart, the expert in foreign affairs, now
it's potty, absolutely potty, and I think it's a sign of Theresa May's weakness that she's felt that a reshuffle somehow or other would reboot the Maybot.
Has it worked, you mean?
I don't think it has. and not least because actually, you see that when men came in and she was going to sack them, they stood their ground and managed to stay in post and actually got things added to their portfolio, like Jeremy Hunt. Whereas when women went in, they were told, all right, well, you can go away.
What does that mean? Has she got a problem with
she's clearly
with
got
women
a problem with women, and there's now a pay gap in the cabinet between men and women of 11%. This, the day after, the new Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport, Matt Hancock, told the House of Commons that men should take a pay cut in the BBC if they're being paid more than women. So I expect Matt Hancock to take a pay cut. But the much bigger issue for me is that Theresa May, for the first time ever, has decided that the Tory party is going to pay an additional 9 MPs. That's in addition to the whole ministerial payroll and the PPSs and the trade envoys that she's appointed, an extra 9 to keep them loyal and on board, an extra £10,000 a year. I think this is fundamentally corrupt.
That's donors' money. Why is it corrupt? It's donors' money.
It's corrupt because in our system, already we have more ministers than France, Germany and Italy put together. So the Prime Minister has phenomenal powers of patronage. When you add it to all the other things that the government has been doing about, Henry VIII's powers about making sure that it's got a majority on committees when it's not got a majority in the House of Commons and so on, it's just more power grab. And I think that's because in the end she is so fundamentally terrified of her backbenches. Mm. She's had to bribe them to keep them on board. And she's worried that her Brexit strategy isn't going to work and it's all going to fall apart. But she knows that if she can just say, well, you'll lose your £10,000 a year, then the poor old chap's probably still going to vote for her.
David James, you're shaking your head.
Well, I think that Chris is actually possibly over-egging the pudding a bit there. I'm not entirely sure whether the British ministerial team is bigger than Germany, France and Italy.
It is.
Put together?
It is, put together.
Well, that is
it's bigger
surprise.
Than China, India and Australia put together.
Put
yes.
together?
Yes, put together.
Oh, all right. Well, I look forward
it's
to seeing...
It's a phenomenal statistic, but it's true. I'll show you them later.
The figures. But, I mean, clearly, so far as the chairmanship of the Conservative Party is concerned, that is a matter for the Conservative Party. And I think that, as I say, in that respect, Chris is slightly over-egging.
No, but it's about the patronage of the Prime Minister. It's not the party that's deciding whether these people should get their money, which I presume they'll have to declare in the normal way, and then they won't be able to vote on anything, incidentally, to do with parliamentary boundaries or anything like that, because obviously they would have a direct financial interest to the Conservative Party.
I guess we've all got a direct financial interest in Parliament.
No. They'd have a specific interest because they're paid employees of the Conservative Party.
Isn't it a free country, though, that Labour could pay you if they wanted to do extra roles in the Labour Party?
The reason we have MPs pay, the reason it was introduced, was so that people would not be beholden to other organisations. And the reasons we have financial declaration of interest, and you have to declare them at the beginning of any debate, and you're not allowed to participate in things where you have a direct personal interest, is precisely
does
to
it break
drive
rules
out
in
corruption.
Any way? Electoral Commission rules, Standards Commission?
I'm looking at that very carefully today.
It's unusual, isn't it? I don't know quite what donors
it's
think about it.
It's never happened before, and this is the first time ever in the history of this country that the government party has more than half of the government party is beholden to the Prime Minister in some shape or form. She might think that's a sign of her strength. I think that's a sign of her weakness.
David James, don't you think Theresa May had a chance just behind you in number 10 Downing Street to show she was a strong Prime Minister, because basically there's no actual challenger against her in the party. So why couldn't she be a bit stronger and basically move people if she wanted to and be a bit tougher with ministers than she was?
Well, she did quite a lot of moving in the lower ranks, and there's no question about that. And we saw people such as, for example, Philip Dunn, who I personally regret seeing going, because I think that he was one of the most effective.
But he's white, and he's 59, and he's a man, so he's toast, right?
None of us should be on this.
On the podcast, you're safe on the podcast, you two.
Well, that comment has already been made, but I mean, clearly she felt that it was time for a new generation to be brought forward, and she did do that. I think that I was surprised was in terms of the cabinet appointments, because quite clearly that this was billed as a major clear out, and of course it became nothing of the sort.
It was the night of the blunt knives, wasn't it? I mean, it's like knives on British Airways.
the blunt stilettos, as the Telegraph headline put it.
She's hopeless. She's just a hopeless Prime Minister,
well,
David,
I believe it too. I have to say, Chris, that I'm not going to agree with that particular point.
But not quite.
She's not hopeless. She has shown immense resilience. If you look at what she pulled out...
Oh, but resilience is no use unless it's her purpose.
Well, she is remarkably resilient.
It's this rope-a-dope thing. She takes the blows on the ropes, and then she comes back and wins the day, as she did, really, with what she got with the EU deal before Christmas. That was a win. Even Chris Bryant must say that
wasn't. It's not a deal. They've already said that nothing's agreed until everything's agreed, so nothing's agreed.
Bear in mind that Jeremy Corbyn was bragging at Glastonbury that she'd be out by Christmas, and clearly she's not out by Christmas, and she's going to be here for Easter and probably Christmas this year.
I think bragging's a bad idea.
So do you think in this reshuffle
she's brought on... Do you see in there a future leader who can lead the party into the next election, David James?
Well, I've no doubt that there are some people that, again, we may not possibly have heard of very much who are coming up. I think that Dominic Raab is an excellent potential Prime Minister.
But why moving? I was
personally surprised, and indeed I was disappointed that Dominic didn't get a cabinet position. Of course, it had been trailed that he was going to get a cabinet
position. But isn't Chris Bryant right? Why move him, given he was helming the EU withdrawal bill? That still has gone to the Lords, and this month there'll be a problem in the Lords.
Well, indeed, and in fact, again, speaking personally, what I would have liked to see was Dominic promoted to Secretary of State for Justice, which I think is...
And keep doing that job.
I must say, I thought that might have... I like Dominic. I get on with Dominic. I fundamentally disagree with him on absolutely everything, other than my private member's bill, which he was very helpful with.
On what?
On emergency workers.
Of course, yeah, that's a big one, an important one. Yes, but it was a mistrust. Perhaps Dominic not being a woman... meant he couldn't get in the cabinet.
It's clearly the case. I mean, you only have to look at the way that the reshuffle panned out, that there was a quota, if you like, of females, of people from ethnic minorities, and so on. And it's right that we should bring
people
forward.
Is that right? Because back in the day, I wrote many articles back in the Telegraph 10 years ago attacking all women shortlists when Harriet Harman brought them in, and it did boost numbers in the Labour Party, but it was seen as tokenistic rubbish.
Well, and of course, many women take the same view, and
so why is it right then that
virulently opposed to
that white men in their 40s or 50s being kicked out because they're white men in their 40s or 50s?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily accept that it was solely because of that. But I have to say that there were some candidates there for cabinet who didn't get to cabinet, and it's a huge missed opportunity. And frankly, I do bemoan the fact that people of the calibre of Philip Dunn, are no longer in government. Yeah.
Chris Bryant.
The thing that's weird to me is that I agree with a degree of positive discrimination, because I think we need to have a government and a parliament that looks more like the people of this country. So it's absolutely right to do that. And actually, sometimes people have been overlooked because they were a woman or because they were black.
Goes both ways.
Okay, exactly. what seems strange to me is this issue that the men went in, they were going to be sacked or moved. They said, no way, Jose, and Theresa May caved, whereas Justine Greening went in and said, I'm not going to be moved. And she said, all right, well, you're out.
So she got a woman problem then, the Prime Minister?
I think the Prime Minister has. I've always thought that she has.
Why?
I don't know. I mean, we're not going to go deep into her psyche to explore all of that. But I mean, part of that is that the Conservative Party has for a long time had that. The Conservative Party now probably down to 70,000 members, very elderly.
Not confirmed numbers, but thought to be.
No, but thought to be, and reported by you as being that. So I'm Michael only Crick, presuming that that's...
frankly, I'd accept Chris's thesis when the Labour Party has a female leader, when, of course, we actually had two female prime ministers. So I think that criticism is pretty broad brush.
Okay, this is a Brexit podcast, and the final minutes of
we're useless.
We're not.
We should be fired. We didn't
enjoy that conversation. David Jones, you're a former Brexit minister. Looking out into this year, what are the key things you want to see from the government on Brexit?
Well, I think that by the time we get to the March Council, we really do have to have a worked-up position. And of course, I think we had the joint report, of course, just before Christmas, and I think that a lot of colleagues within the Conservative Party were quite critical of that. I think that we need to be in a position to go there, and we need to have a negotiation that will actually produce an outcome by the end of the year. And of course, that's an extremely short time scale.
Yeah, and we need to have some idea of transition, do we, by March, or what it'll look like, don't we?
I think we have to be very careful about transition, because of course the joint report was frankly pretty onerous from the UK's point of view.
Wasn't it?
It was. Well, no, that was a joint report.
Sorry, but of course.
But I think that we do need to have a much stronger stance on that.
Yep. And Chris Bryant, what do you hope for from Brexit? It's the beginning of January, you've got a full year ahead of you.
I think we're going to hell in a handcart, and I kind of want to stop it, really. I know that's not what probably the voters in my constituency want, and I think we could only do that if we were to have another referendum, which incidentally wouldn't be a second referendum, it would be the third referendum, because the people who lost the first referendum didn't live with that for the rest of their lives. The key point for me is I'm really worried about the timescale. Michael Gove has said that there should be a 5-year transition for farmers, but everybody else is to have less than a 2-year transition, and I just don't think that's going to work. If you look at, for instance, the insurance industry, they now are selling products for the next 12 months. Mm. So when you get to March, they'll already want to have them in place in a year's time. And if they don't have legal certainty about that by this March, I think there's going to be really major problems in the financial services industry. Now, that's just one part of the whole equation. But I think, you know, supermarkets are going to start worrying about whether we're going to be on WTO terms food.
Do you worry about Labour? Labour is not really clear.
Yes.
Not clear after the 2-year period. What do you want to do? Stay in the customs union, the single market?
I think we should be staying in the single market and the customs union.
But that's against your boss's policy.
Yes, I know. I'm aware of that.
he's made it absolutely clear that's unacceptable.
Well, yes, he has. But David, you probably think that he's wrong sometimes, and I think that he's wrong. I think, oddly, in this particular thing, he's way out of whack with Labour Party members. 80% of Labour Party members think, I don't mean MPs, I mean MPs around the country, including Momentum members.
But not Labour voters, though.
Wrong. Labour voters are in favour of staying in the single market and increasingly, as indeed I think is the country, according to all the recent polls that I've seen in the Daily Telegraph and other notable journalistic endeavours.
Trouble is, of course, Chris, we actually voted to leave.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
And leaving the European Union means leaving the single market, leaving the customs union,
I don't think
and
it does.
No longer and being subject to the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice.
That wasn't on the ballot paper, and most importantly, very regularly, leading Leave campaigners said that, of course, we wouldn't be leaving the single market.
What are the odds on getting a second referendum on the deal?
Very high, I think. I think in the end. I think the oddest thing of the last 3 years in British politics has been things have swung so rapidly without anybody noticing sometimes, like in the general election last year. I don't know whether David felt this, but in my own constituency, at the beginning of the campaign, I thought I was going to lose. I was certain I was going to lose. A week before polling day, I thought
but
I was
going
to lose.
But you can be quite a glass-half empty person. I know you pretty well.
But interestingly...
Well, actually, normally I overestimate how Labour's going to do. I think of myself as a jovial person. I don't like you anymore, Chris Hope. I'm never going to do this again.
But
anyway, I thought we were going to lose, and then we won handsomely. And I'm in a... You know, my seat
but
historically has been Labour since 1985.
But that was nothing to do with Brexit. And I think the reason that the Conservatives did worse than we'd anticipated was because we framed it as the Brexit election, when actually the electorate had discounted Brexit as an issue.
Chris Barnett thinks there will be another referendum. What do you think about that,
I
David
don't think
Jones?
That there will be. And in fact, all the polls that I see, and obviously we're reading different newspapers, but all the polls that I read is that people actually just want us to crack on.
But you could have both views at the same time. And I suspect the electorate is sort of multi-viewed at the same time.
There will be a vote, of course, finally in October, won't there, I think, on the final deal. Theresa May's targeting October for the date. That will be a big moment in House of Commons.
Probably. It'll be a huge moment. It'll be a huge moment. And that, of course, I think is the crucial point.
But what happens if there is no deal? Then there won't be a vote, presumably.
Well, the vote's going to be either accept this deal or no deal, so you have to vote for the deal, won't you? But that's what the government thinks.
But there may be no deal. I mean, Suella Fernandez thinks that no deal is better than having a deal.
She said better than a bad deal. It's good for us if we have no deal.
Those are the precise words.
But the Prime Minister's position, as you know, is that
let's say
there is something approximating to a deal, and there's a vote in House of Commons.
Well, approximating to a deal is no good, is it?
Labour
it's either MPs, a deal or it isn't.
Labour MPs will not vote for a no deal, that's the point. So it's almost a kind of false argument.
No, but it's a moot point whether you would be having a vote on a no deal.
Yes.
Okay, how can you have a vote on a nothing? I mean, that's the point, isn't it? So, I presume if there is no deal, then it all just happens without any kind of vote. Whereas if there is a deal, which requires some form of legislation, maybe extensive legislation, then that will have to go through the House. And what I think is far more likely is that the government might lose individual votes on specific elements within that.
Yes. Just finally, David, do you think it's a mistake not to have a no-deal minister in government, as we've been told was going to happen and didn't happen?
Well, I mean, we know that Steve Baker has actually been tasked with doing that.
But put him in cabinet so he can...
No, I don't think so. I mean, the view I take is that David Davis is the Brexit secretary and he speaks for the department in cabinet.
Fair enough.
The most extraordinary thing is that David Davis now is the most Remain person in that department. I mean, and frankly, the most sane. God.
No comment.
On that note, Chris Bryant, David Jones, thank you for coming to the podcast.
Huge pleasure and a happy new year to you.
Thank you for having me.